If you turn on the television these days, you're bound to see at least one talent competition as you scroll through the channels. American Idol, The Voice, World of Dance are just a few of the shows currently airing. The summer will bring the return of America's Got Talent and So You Think You Can Dance. I don't, among others. It's hard not to feel like we're in a never-ending search for the next superstar. As it turns out, we've been at it for a long time. While American Idol revolutionized the genre in the early 2000s, these talent shows have a long history on television. Our next guest is here to guide us through that history and help us figure out why we keep coming back to these shows time and again. Robert Thompson is a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, am I right? There's a lot of these talent competitions on television these days.
Yeah, they're all over the place. They're easy to produce, and they've got a long, long, long history to prove that they work. Even before there was television, even before there was radio, for that matter, talent competitions were being held on the vaudeville stage. Vaudeville, of course, went from approximately 1880 to about 1930. And then once radio kicks in, and radio, network radio starts in the late 1920s, by 1934, we had Major Bowes Amateur Hour, which was a talent competition, and it had a gong for people who didn't do well. It had a kind of nasty judge occasionally if your act wasn't very good, and it had audience participation. You could either send in a postcard, how quaint was that, or you could dial Judson 6-7000 and you could vote on telephone.
And then in the early days of TV, we had, as you said, shows, Original Amateur Hour, Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, and some big names ended up appearing. A very young Gladys Knight, I think I saw, a young Frank Sinatra. I think Elvis Presley was rejected from one of them. But these attracted a lot of talent.
Yeah, Major Bowes' Original Amateur Hour was on radio. That was 34 to 45. And then when it moved to television in the late 1940s, a guy named Ted Mack came on, and he hosted that. And on radio, the Original Amateur Hour, you're right, Sinatra was discovered. Maria Callas, one of the big opera people, and some other opera people as well. And then on the TV version, Gladys Knight, Pat Boone, even Louis Farrakhan, under a different name, played the violin, believe it or not, on the Original Amateur Hour. So a lot of people that would go on to have big names, both in entertainment and otherwise performed on this. And then you mentioned Arthur Godfrey. He was on from 46 to 58 on CBS, first radio, and then TV in the very early days of television. In 1948, I think, it was the number one TV show in the country. So these things have been producing stars, inventing people way, way, way before the big explosion of American Idol. And again, Sinatra and Gladys Knight move over Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson. Those were some pretty big names. And we're not even mentioning the 80s and 90s with Star Search. And that list of names is a breathtaking one.
We'll get into some more of the history and maybe some of those later stars. But I want to pause for a moment, Bob, and talk about why. These shows, as you said, number one back then. We've had number one talent shows more recently. Why do we like to watch them?
Well, I think the question would more be, why wouldn't we? I mean, in so many ways, you've got performers come on, and we get the opportunity to see someone who is we haven't heard of before. It's a competition, so we know there's going to be a winner. It's got the built-in drama of that kind of thing. In some cases, there's audience participation. We get to be part of it. And I think there is something exciting about watching someone who nobody knows yet have the possibility of becoming a star right before our very eyes. We all like to watch these, VH1 and A&E and all these other things about how people became stars. Here you get to actually watch it happening before your very eyes. So it's, I think, kind of a natural sort of format and one that keeps coming back and will probably keep coming back forever.
talking about the past, present, and future of these televised talent shows, the American Idols and The Voice and the like. Robert Thompson is with us, pop culture expert at Syracuse University. I want to move ahead a little bit. Here's a show that kind of straddled the line between variety show, talent show, and kind of our love of failure, and bringing back the gong you mentioned earlier, the Gong Show. Here's a clip of a performer who didn't quite hit the right notes.
Take me home, country road, to the place where I belong. West Virginia, riding mama, take me home, country road.
And Bob, the failure. American Idol did more of that, it seemed like, in the early days.
That's
showing
right.
the one who fell flat on their face in the early auditions. How does that? It seems like there's a love-hate relationship with those kind of clips.
Yes, I'm really glad you brought up Gong Show, because that's actually a fairly early manifestation of these things. We had the radio talent shows. We had those things we already talked about. But long before American Idol, even before Star Search, the talent show comes back in the 70s after a little bit of a break in the form of the Gong Show, which starts out as a daytime program and then becomes syndicated. And under Chuck Barris, right, from 76 to 1980, this becomes one of the trippiest, most hallucinogenic things that television has ever aired. And it's Barris wrote a book about it, which was just as trippy. They made a movie based on the book. And it's not that this didn't create some of its own stars. Andrea McArdle, who shortly after her Gong Show appearance would become the first Annie on Broadway. Paul Rubens, who we all know as Pee Wee Herman. They all started on the Gong Show. But for the most part, this was just it was a parody of the talent show way back in the 1970s. The unknown comic became a star on this program. A stand-up comedian who told bad jokes with a bag over his head. Gene the Dancing Machine. And of course, Chuck Barris behaving as though he were from the planet Neptune. One of the most fascinating shows. I still love popping the old Betamax tapes in and watching these things. And they brought it back in 2017, starring not Barris. Barris, of course, had passed, but somebody named Tommy Maitland, who of course we all know was Mike Myers, who never left character of this host that he was playing.
Now, you mentioned a Star Search a couple times, and yeah, when American Idol came along, it's like, oh, isn't this just a Star Search? So here's a listen to Ed McMahon. He was then, of course, known best as Johnny Carson's sidekick. Here he is introducing a young performer.
Our current champion is going for win number two and sings to become next year's champion. Does that sound nice, gang? Next year's champion? Okay. From Kentwood, Louisiana, here is 10-year-old Brittany Spears.
Well, that name's kind of familiar.
It is, and she's not the most famous person that came out of Star Search. Beyonce appeared in 93. Britney Spears at 10 in 90. Christina Aguilera that same year. Aaliyah, Justin Timberlake, Leon Rimes, Usher. Who else? The comedians, Dennis Miller, Sinbad, Adam Sandler, Norm MacDonald, Dave Chappelle, Kevin James, Alanis Morissette when she was very young. This was kind of a lower rent program. It was produced by Bob Banner, who was a friend of mine and he's long passed, but he had done Candid Camera and Dinah Shore. And this show it had a whole bunch of categories. It wasn't just singers, but the list of people who were discovered on that show is really an impressive one.
Talk about the economics of doing a show like this. You're not paying a bunch of famous people who are already famous actors or singers or whatever.
Yeah, you got to pay a host. And you've got to keep the lights on and all the rest of it. But otherwise, it is a comparatively cheap way to take up a half hour or an hour in most of the later cases of programming. Because you're right, these people are not yet famous. You don't have to pay them a whole lot of money. You have to later after you make them famous. But it was a comparatively cheap way of doing things. Now, some of these that we've got today, they're still cheaper than doing an hour-long scripted limited program, but the production values are so complex. The audition tours and all the rest of it are complex, but the payoff can be really great. On American Idol, if you create a star, American Idol then gets to benefit from that person being a star. And the spin-off stuff as well goes way back to the radio days. You know, now with American Idol, you create the finalists, you have the show, it gets huge ratings, especially in the old days. It used to be the top several shows per week. And then you go on tour. That happened with the Amateur Hour way back on radio, and all the other American Idol spinoffs. Major Bowes Amateur Hour, you could buy a microphone that you could hook to your radio so you too could pretend to be on Amateur Hour. It's almost as though radio's version of Major Bowes Amateur Hour invented karaoke back in the 30s and 40s.
We continue our conversation about the popularity of TV talent shows. Robert Thompson is with us, professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you watched, have you been a fan of American Idol, The Voice, Dancing with the Stars, the other dancing shows that aren't stars, any of these talent shows, past or present? Why do you like them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Jeanette is on the line in Walworth. Jeanette, hello.
Hello and good afternoon. My story goes very quickly. Once Vic Damone had passed away, which was 1 to 2 years ago now, Sinatra came out with a quote. They found him saying that Vic Damone had the best pipes in the business. And my girlfriend Maxine said, he never heard your father. And I said, that's funny you say that. My dad won the Major Bowes Amateur Hour before Vic Damone.
Oh,
no kidding.
Major Bowes came to Walworth to take my dad to Hollywood. But my little Italian grandma said my son stayed home. So my dad got a watch and a certificate, and Major Bowes said, I can't change your mind. I can't take him. And my grandma said, no, he stayed home.
Well, now, was your dad a singer? Did he keep singing the rest of his life?
We had a restaurant, and my father would very frequently come out and sing to the customers, yes.
Fantastic. Wow, what a story, Jeanette. Thank you so much for calling in. Bob, I bet there's a lot of families around the country who have that story where somebody could have been a contender for one of these shows.
Yes, I mean, there were Major Bowes, I think, did about 1,600 and some odd episodes, so it went on for a long, long, long time. But I think that is the first person I've ever heard from who is related to someone who won at Major Bowes. So, and from Walworth, a town I've been to, so that was pretty exciting.
Jeanette, thank you so much for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Irene in Phillips. Irene, hello.
Hi, gentlemen. I wonder if anybody has ever heard of the Morris B. Sachs Amateur Hour in Chicago. No.
Not me, Bob.
I haven't, and I grew up in Chicago, so I should know that.
Oh, you're probably too young. I was on the early TV in 1951 playing my accordion, and my folks owned a tavern. We were able to send in postcards, and all of the customers got postcards to send in. But I only got a watch, which I still have, and a photo, and a 78 record of my performance, and I still have that. And I still play the accordion at nursing homes around Phillips.
Well, I'll wait. If you want to go get the accordion, I'd love to hear your performance.
Is it nearby, Irene? No? Okay. Well, thank you so much. What a story. Irene, thanks for calling. Now, that sounds, Bob, like it might have been a local show, and I didn't even think about that. There were national shows, but probably there were local permutations, especially back in the day.
That is true, especially in the early days of television. Of course, 1951, TV doesn't really get kicked in until about 47. We don't get 50% of the country with televisions until 53. So that was the early days of television. And yes, just like every city had a couple of kid shows and all of these other programs, local talent shows were common as well. Again, it was so easy to do for television. It took place on a stage. It didn't cost a lot of money. It was a natural for the medium. It was a natural in 1951. It's a natural in 2019.
Thanks a lot for that call, Irene. We're talking to Robert Thompson from Syracuse University. He researches TV and pop culture there. Talking about the history of televised and other talent contests. Before we go back to our callers, Bob, I want to give a listen to, and we've mentioned a lot, American Idol. I want to give a listen to their first episode.
3 months from now, live on this very stage, an as-yet unknown talent will be launched into superstardom.
We don't know who that is yet. Right now, they could be parking cars or even waiting on tables. Who knows?
What we do know is by the end of the summer, that person's life will change forever.
Because you at home decide who will become the next American Idol.
So Ryan Seacrest and the other guy there. And Bob, the American Idol, I mean, yes, there's a long history of these shows, but you mentioned they up the production value, and it seems like they really up the storytelling and drama value.
Yeah. First of all, a shout-out that you called him the other guy.
Sorry, I couldn't remember his name.
You're right. Nobody remembers that Ryan Seacrest used to co-host that with a guy named Brian Dunkelman, and
yes,
that poor guy completely disappeared from the face of the earth, although I think it was the final episode. They did bring him back. But anyway, that's beside the point. Yeah, what American Idol did, it was essentially two shows in the beginning. The first show was the tryouts. And the stroke of genius in the beginning, which was also kind of mean, was they had Simon Cowell, who played this guy that when somebody performed and was bad, he would say these outrageous things. Now, Major Bose would do a little bit of that, but Simon Cowell took it to a whole new level. His he had many famous things, but somebody got up there and sang badly, and he said, "Do you have a singing teacher? Yes. Do you have a lawyer? No. Fire your singing teacher and hire a lawyer and sue your singer teacher." I mean, it was that kind of thing. And that was really fun, even though it didn't appeal to the nicest part of the human spirit. That show was made, and it became number one thanks to the promos of the outrageous things that Simon Cowell would say. That began to wear thin. Now it's much less of that kind of program. But watching people fail, it turned out in 2002 when this show started, was almost, if not more appealing to a huge audience than watching them succeed.
On a related note, we have Barbara with us in Milwaukee. Barbara, hi.
Hi. Yeah, just as you were saying about the fun of watching people fail, I wonder if the guest remembers a one season where they had people on who were very bad, and they thought they were good, so they weren't in on the joke, and they were trying to become the top winner, and the audience knew, everybody knew. You want to comment on that? Because it was very crushing at the end,
wow,
and everybody felt horrible. And it never was on again. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I forget the name of this show. It was like The Big Show or USA Star or something like that. It wasn't American Idol. It was a different program. And you're right. It was one of the most sadistic ideas I've ever heard of. The whole thing is they all thought they were on an American Idol type of program. And they had all these judges, and they'd bring these terrible people out, and then the judges would say how wonderful they were going to be a star, and all this kind of thing. It was a complete parody of these kinds of things, really mean-spirited, and then, of course, in the end, they revealed what it was all about. It only lasted one season. It shouldn't have gotten out in the air in the first place, but I have to secretly confess, it was kind of compelling to watch.
Barbara, thank you so much for bringing that up. Yeah, Superstar USA, my producer.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, yeah.
I always hope my job here at Public Radio isn't actually a secret version of that. Bob,
you'd have known by now.
Okay, I hope so. Now, looking at the current crop of shows, Bob, I know American Idol came back after ending. What, in our last minute or so, what are the best shows right now in this genre?
Well, The Voice, of course, is always competitive. Dancing with the Stars continues to be a big hit. I personally, though, like America's Got Talent, and it is now continuously, for many years now, been the top show of the summer. And what I like about it is I always thought I was born too late. I would have loved vaudeville, where you've got singers and dancers and jugglers and magicians and people who do bizarre sorts of things. And America's Got Talent is really like what vaudeville used to be in the late 19th century. And it consistently gets really high ratings. It's had several rip-offs already. And I think that show, for all of its bluster and blather, is still a pretty good show.
We'll leave it there, Bob. Thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
That was lots of fun. Thank you.
That's Robert Thompson, professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. He joined us to talk about the history and popularity of TV talent competitions.